clarify where a couple of members are who did not forward any apologies. And you are attending to that and getting Mr. Williams in the fifth. Right. Fine. Okay. On that particular note, there's to be welcoming, first of all, because someone that the committee has not directly engaged with, although we engaged with the issue, and that's Mr. Jeffrey Lever, councillor of the South African Council for Non-Proliferation of Weapons of Mass Destruction. Thank you for being with us here this morning. Right. And Ms. Melanie Radia, an A. Is it an E or an A? Radia, all right. Acting Chief Director, Non-Proliferation. Thank you for being here. And again, the DDG. Ms. Torewa Zombie Peter, thank you for being here. On another matter. Okay. From the opening, it's closed here at, we was closing at 20 to 12. I would like to close it at 12, because I do want to add something to the agenda as well. So we need to close this at 12. Okay. Fine. Now, in terms of the apologies, we've got a medical apology from Mrs. Mantash. I have asked for a letter to be written to her. I'm not sure if Mr. Herman's dealt with it. We have tried to get hold of her. We weren't able to yesterday, which is a matter of Mr. Adrian, Honourable Adrian Williams, who's ill. He was ill yesterday, but I'm so just is unable to make it this morning. The Honourable Nicholas Cronall will be here later. He's just at Science and Technology, and then will be returning to this committee. Now, those are the apologies I have received from staff. I'm not sure of any other apologies. Right. In the absence of not receiving an apology, no, we do have an apology from the IFP. This was, it was sent to me, and I asked the Honourable Esther Hazen if he would also send it to the Secretary. I see that has not been done. But he did send an apology indicating he was attending a party political issue involving the leader of the IFP. So we accepted that. But he sent all his communications through to your fact that he... Right, thank you. On that basis then, with the apologies, I need to ask Mr. Whittington if he will please contact the ESF to get an alternate from them here. We don't have an apology, although I'm aware through the documents from Parliament that the Honourable Shivambu is elsewhere, but that's from parliamentary documentation rather than an apology. So if you would communicate with Mr. Whittington with the ESF and there's someone here. Thank you very much. So on that particular note, we're going to have a look at the agenda. And on the agenda, we're going to put here the PPD, Promotion and Protection of Investment Bill. And that is the final report that's through. And discuss that when the time comes. So that'll come after the consideration of minutes. Thank you. That'll go in. I'm hoping that'll be before 11 and at 10:30. But I'm just adding to this agenda now. On that basis, can we have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Thank you. Seconded by the Honourable Kalako. I just need to drink some water. I'd like to thank the Honourable Mashaba, who has agreed to join us. And I must apologize, I'm not aware of the committee you normally would be attending.
Good morning, everybody. My committee is communication and women in presidential. I have two committees.
Two important committees that we certainly need to ensure is effective, and thank you for saying that you're there. Thank you very much, Honourable Mashaba. Thank you. Thank you very much. On that note, we're going to immediately go in to the briefing on the non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. Thank you. DDG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Good morning to the Honourable Members. We will do the presentation in two parts. I will cover some opening remarks to set the scene for the presentation, and then Melanie will then go through the presentation. Madam Chair, since 1994, South Africa has consistently promoted a view that continued existence of weapons of mass destruction is a threat to international peace and security. As a result, we have joined a number of international treaties, which will be covered in the presentation, to ensure that we are able to manage the trade of items that are in the control list that are used, or we call them dual-use items, because they are used by industry for production of specific products. As a result, it is important that we control how these items are traded in South Africa. We have also established domestic controls to prevent the proliferation of nuclear, chemical, as well as biological weapons and their means of delivery. This is done through the work of the Council, the Non-Proliferation Council, of which Mr. Lieber is part of, and the role of the Council is to consider applications from applicants from industry that would like to trade in these items, and the Council will then issue the permits after reviewing the application. And in order to ensure that we have effective controls in the trade of these items, we have a working relationship or working very closely with SAPS to ensure that through coordination, but also...
Honourable Mkhondi.
I'm sorry for the interruption. I think what is being presented is very important, but I don't have the copy.
Right. There we are now. You please get me. Oh, no. I see what you mean. You're referring to the DDG. No, DDG hasn't got the presentation. She's simply opening it. She's prefacing it. And because of that, we will get that effectively recorded in a minute. All right. It is important, you're right. It is. Members, I can just indicate this about HEMSTART. The budget of Parliament is quite tight. And it is very difficult, just as we were in the past, 5 years ago, if you like, able to order a HEMSTART at the drop of a hat, copies, printing. So, where possible, we try to capture extensive myths, which I know Mr. Medina is doing. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The issues that I'm referring to are also captured in the presentation, but it's a brief overview that I'm giving, Madam Chair. As I was saying, we are working very closely with us to ensure that the items that are managed by the Council are flagged on the subsystem, so that whenever there is a request, they ensure that the necessary permit is granted for the trade of those. And we also have developed through the Secretariat that Melanie is saying, we have developed a training module on the controlled items, and this is rolled out to the SARS officials. There's normally a question, Chair, as to why this is sitting within the DGR. And the reason is that this relates to trade of controlled items, and it relates to, or the work of the council is related to the issuing of permits to allow or control the trade of those items. Now I will hand over to Melanie to then take us through the presentation. Thanks, manager.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chairperson, honourable members. As the DDG pointed out, my presentation will cover all the work of the council. So basically, I'll tell you about the mission and functions of the council, what our international obligations are with regard to weapons of mass destruction and areas of control in the country. I will also speak about our legislative framework and how we go about implementing the controls. I'll briefly tell you about the composition of the South African Council for the Non-Prevention of Weapons of Mass Destruction, and then the control structure that is used to actually implement the controls in the country. And very briefly, I'll touch on some of the achievements in the past year or so. So the first few slides in the presentation are abbreviations. You will find that in this area of control there are a vast number of abbreviations. I won't go through that in detail. But I'll quickly talk about policy. Now, the South African policy on the non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction was adopted by Cabinet in August 1994. And it's comprised of basically 5 points. The first point is to promoting international peace and security. So basically, South Africa should aim to adopt a position supporting the non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction with the goal of promoting international peace and security. Secondly, South Africa should continue implementing a policy of non-proliferation and arms control and be an active participant in the various non-proliferation regimes and suppliers groups. These non-proliferation regimes and suppliers groups have regular meetings at which international controls are discussed, and we regularly participate in those meetings. Thirdly, that South Africa utilizes its position as a member of the suppliers regimes and of the action group and the non-aligned movement to promote the importance of non-proliferation and ensure that these controls do not become a means whereby the developing countries are prevented from obtaining access to advanced technologies which they require for their development. Now, one of the important aspects of these control regimes is to widely implement an export control regime. In that regard, it is left up to each country their own national sovereign rights to implement export controls. But what we found is that these export controls can become means whereby certain developing countries are prevented access from certain of these advanced technologies. It could be due to suspicion of proliferation in terms of terrorist groups getting access to it, or diversion, or other such proliferation aspects. But part of our position in being part of these solutions and control groups and interacting at these forums is to ensure that our fellow developing countries are not hindered in their development. Fourthly, there are best interests of the Africa with regard to the use of technology in nuclear, chemical, biological, and nuclear spheres for civil and peaceful purposes are at all current effects. Yes, I would say the best interest of the Africa, which is the use of all the technology in these controlled areas, for civil and peaceful purposes, at all times these sectors are protected. And the last thing that we continue in our objective to become a member of all the non-proliferation regimes and supply groups. The mission of the Council is indicated in the actually four very three broad statements that we protect the interest of the state, fulfill the obligations in accordance with the non-proliferation policy, and meet international undertakings. And this is us to actively implementing an export control system. So the Council controls registers inspects control goods and also verifies the import, export, re-export, transit and in-use of the control goods. The Council also advises the Minister with regards to which control goods should be declared to be under control, and this is done through government notices and regulations. The Council also takes necessary steps to prevent the contravention of the provisions of the Act. statutory influence on compliance with them. Council administers registration of all entities involved with control, so import, export, use, manufacture, production, all those activities are controlled, and controlled entities also make regular declarations to the council on their activities. In this regard, there's also mechanisms to institution coordinate investigations and inspections. So in the event of suspicion of non-compliance, there would be an investigation and also inspections conducted to assist that process. And then it should perform any other function with a view to efficient achievement of the objects of the council. I'll briefly talk about the international obligations that South Africa has in terms of the non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. Some of the major treaties and conventions that we are party to is the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, the Nuclear Suppliers Group, which is a control regime related to the NPT, the first treaty that I mentioned, that actually lists control groups which are used to be controlled, the Chemical Weapons Convention, Biological Weapons Convention, the Missile Technology Control Regime, which is actually related to the delivery systems for the chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. The Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, which prevents testing of any nuclear weapons. And the Boston Arrangement, which covers armed control as well as curious items in terms of weapons of mass destruction. This diagram illustrates the overlap of the international obligations, so it illustrates the area of control. Due to historical reasons, the current African control system entails the use of various departments to control the different areas. So in the diagram, you notice this is NHG, which is the supply group, NTDR, which is Missile Technology Control Regime, WA, which is Arsenal Arrangement, PUL, Dual Use List, and ML is military list. CWC, Chemical Weapons Convention, AG is Australia Group, and BTWC is the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention. So in the areas of control, the South African Council for the Non-Proliferation of Weapons of Mass Destruction covers the Nuclear Supplies Group Part 2, which deals with nuclear items that have a dual use purpose. So part 1 is actually shibboleth items, which is actually nuclear items itself, and that is controlled by the Department of Energy. The council also controls the Missile Technology Control Regime, and the square area in the back, which divides into two rectangles, is the Boston Arrangement, which is actually implemented by the National Conventional Arms Control Committee. Now, overlapping with those controls, and by overlapping, I mean that there are certain items that are listed in the NSG, NGCR, CWC, and AG that is also included in the Boston Arrangement. But the current control system entails that the council itself controls all the major items, and then whatever is not covered by those regimes are covered by the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, which basically has an objective of controlling all arms-related goods and technologies in the country. So the current overlap results in certain permits being required for both the Non-Proliferation Council and in some instances from also the Department of Energy as well as the National Conventional Arms Control Committee. But this is carefully managed through regular interaction between the three bodies where we participate in each other's committees and control groups that consider and recommend these permits for transfers of the controlled items. In terms of the legislative framework, the primary legislation that has been promulgated to take care of the non-proliferation aspects in the country is the Non-Proliferation of Weapons of Mass Destruction Act. This act provides for the establishment of the Non-Proliferation Council. As a statutory body that has no administrative, secretarial, or financial support of its own, it's provided through the Department of Trade and Industry. Then there's also provision for appointment of inspectors in the case of non-compliance or if there is any other reason to inspect industry. Seizure of goods, again in the case of non-compliance, where goods have to be confiscated or seized from the companies for cases of criminal procedures. But it should also be noted that these activities are conducted in conjunction with the South African Police Service. And this is purely because we want to do a measure of control where the criminal procedures act is also implemented in conjunction with the non-proliferation act to ensure that any seizure of goods or confiscation is done in a with appropriate legislative measures in place to ensure that prosecution is able to take place in those cases. The Act also provides for registration, as I mentioned earlier, so any person or entity in possession or control of any of the controlled goods would have to register with the council. So any activity with regards to import, export, transit, manufacture, production, and use of any of the control goods, or even services as well, with regards to brokering, would have to be registered with the council. The Act provides for control goods to be listed in terms of regulations and government notices. Various control regimes internationally do adopt their own list of control goods, but it's up to each country in terms of their national sovereign rights to declare these as control goods and ensure proper export controls are implemented in that regard. So in that case, control goods are listed in the regulations and government notices. Furthermore, regulations, there is an enabling provision in the legislation for the minister to make regulations, which actually lists enabling provisions for the regime treaties to be implemented in the country. And then, of course, with any confidential business activity, there is a need for if the information shared regarding confidential business, there's a need for this information to be kept with the appropriate security measures. So in that regard, there is a confidentiality provision in the Act to ensure that the commercial interests of industry are taken care of. Annual reporting, this provision enables the council to report annually to the Minister of Trade and Industry, who in turn tables an annual report at Parliament. Offences and penalties, as I mentioned earlier, there has to be provision for any entity or person in contravention of the Act to be penalised. In that regard, the Act caters for offences and penalties to be taken care of. And of course, treaties, regimes and conventions, the Act caters for these international instruments to be part of domestic legislation. So the government notices and regulations in further detail. As I mentioned, there's an enabling provision for the Minister to promulgate government notices for certain aspects in the regulation, and similarly to promulgate regulations to assist council in fulfilling its obligations. So in this regard, we have promulgated, the Minister has promulgated registration regulation for registration of all controlled entities. A chemical regulation which actually illustrates the requirements in terms of the Chemical Weapons Convention. And then there's various government notices listing all the controls. So we've taken the list from the various international regimes and treaties and maybe part of the legislation to do with these government notices. It should be noted, however, that Biological Weapons Convention does not have a list of controls as does the other regimes and treaties. And in that regard, we have considered the subsequent control system and adopted a list that is suitable to suit our requirements in terms of export control as well as the activities of our industry. The council convention, the Act caters for a council to be formed, and in this regard it specifies that there should be a member from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, two members from the Department of Defense, a member from the South African Nuclear Energy Corporation, Department of Trade and Industry, and then due to the interaction with the various industry sectors, the Act also makes for members from the chemical, biological, media, and aerospace sectors to be represented on the council. And due to operational experience, we've realized that there is a need for the Department of Energy and the security agencies to also be on the council, and in that regard, the Minister has appointed additional members to address those areas. This diagram illustrates the control structure. So the Minister of Trade and Industry appoints the Non-Proliferation Council, which is a statutory body. And the Director General of Trade and Industry provides the administrative, secretarial, and financial support to the Council through the Non-Proliferation Secretariat. In the implementation of its obligation, the Council has found it necessary to appoint certain committees and working groups. runs the primary committee of the council is the control committee, which is a committee that has been established to consider and make recommendations on all important export applications. This committee is composed of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, State Security Agency, Defense Intelligence, the Directorate of Conventional Arms Control, which is the Secretary of the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, the Department of Energy, and the safeguard component of the Nuclear Energy Corporation of South Africa. This committee considers applications that are made directly to the Arms Corporation Council, but it also considers applications that are made to the Ministry of Energy for the transfer of nuclear goods and technologies. And this is through the provision in the Act, the Non-Proliferation Act, as well as the Nuclear Energy Act, that says that the Ministry of Energy would have to consult with the Non-Proliferation Council on all matters related to non-proliferation. So one of the matters related to non-proliferation would be the authorization for the transfer of nuclear items. There's the Chemical Weapons Working Committee, which is a committee that has been established to advise the Council on all matters related to the Chemical Weapons Convention. The Biological Weapons Working Committee, which advises on all matters related to the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention. The Nuclear and Missile Duties Committee, which considers all issues in terms of the nuclear supplies group, so all the nuclear duties items, as well as the Missile Technology Control Regime. The Non-Proliferation Review Committee, or NPRC, was established to review the Non-Proliferation Act and make recommendations regarding possible changes and amendments. The CCDCO Coordinating Committee was established to advise Council on all matters related to the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. But then there's two project management committees, one related to the service level agreement with the Council for Geosciences, and the other related to the service level agreement with Strategic Laboratories. Now, the service level agreement with the Council for Geosciences, in terms of the international monitoring stations that have been established in the country with regards to the CGPO. The Council for Geosciences actually maintains and operates these stations on behalf of the country in terms of the treaty. And we found it necessary to provide some financial support to the Council for Geosciences in the implementation of these obligations. With regards to Strategic Laboratories, this is one of the most specialized laboratories in the country. It actually houses South Africa's single small scale facility, which is the only facility in the country which is allowed to possess and do research on chemical weapons chemicals. So they have in their possession a limited quantity of chemical weapons chemicals. It's actually they manage to have up to one ton, but they have very minimal quantities, not more than 100 kgs actually. And they maintain the single small scale facility on behalf of the country and on behalf of the council. In this regard, they would have to provide regular regulations to the council, and this is provided to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. And they participate in our working committees as well, in the Chemical Weapons Working Committee as well as the Biological Weapons Working Committee, because they do possess a biological capability as well. This facility is related to the Department of Defense, and it is a subsidiary body of Arms Corps. And as Paloma mentioned, we have a memorandum of understanding with the South African Revenue Service Customs. This is especially important in terms of the importance of the legislation at the borders, because we do implement an import and export control system, but it's vitally important that SARS is aware of the transfers of the control goods and they are able to confiscate, because if there is no policy in place, or to stop containers if they feel that there is suspicion related to specific transfers, and to make sure that all transfers are done within the enabling provisions of the Act. I'll very briefly touch on some of the achievements of the Council. So, in terms of all I've mentioned during this presentation, we can say that we successfully accomplished the objective of the Council in implementing a non-proliferation control regime in the country. And then the permit system was maintained to enable the trade of control goods and support these controls in the country. We have recently established a compliance division which undertakes all activities related to outreach in the country. So although architecture decisions occur prior to the compliance unit being formed, these have vastly increased recently due to the operation of the compliance unit. And in this regard, we have regular workshops, information sessions, or individual visits to particular industries to inform them further about the legislative provisions that are in place and assist them with the controls. And in this regard, they also assist to develop more voluntary internal compliance mechanisms as well. And then capacity building in Africa. We embarked on various workshops and training courses in conjunction with other international organizations, one of them being the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons in particular, to both faculty in Africa, to ensure that their non-selection obligations are implemented as well and supported, as well as our obligations and their obligations in terms of the United Nations Security Council Resolution 5040, which is directly related to non-selection aspects. So in Canada alone, we've held an analytical chemistry course through collective laboratories for certain countries in Africa to develop fields and capacity with regards to analysis of toxic chemicals and enable them to use certain advanced analytical chemistry equipment. We also have an assistance and protection course, but in terms of the Chemical Weapons Convention, the convention itself is likely to assistance and protection in terms of deliberate use of chemical weapons. But what we've done with this course is that the likelihood of chemical weapons being used is low, but the likelihood of toxic chemical incidents occurring with transfers across the borders of toxic chemicals and explosions and other incidents occurring is higher. So we have to capacitate these countries with regards to addressing these toxic spills or accidents if they do occur. And this course actually enables or assists these participants to develop capacity in terms of addressing these incidents. So reacting to what happens and when they happen, and also we realize that there is a possibility that certain of these countries do not have access to advanced mechanisms to address villages and to clean up villages. So the course actually attempts to enable the participants to use regular day-to-day equipment like hose pipe buckets, normal day-to-day stuff that is found regularly to assist in cleaning up these toxic villages of industrial chemicals. We also have a customs course for customs officials in South Africa to build skills and capacity with regards to implementation of the treaty and conventions and how to identify goods, the control goods at borders. And in addition to actually rolling out such courses to Africa, we also have a detailed in-depth course that we hold for our African customs authorities, where we go out to the various ports and both capacity with regards to identifying the control goods. So if a container comes into the country or is leaving the country and is not declared, they are able to identify through the documentation or through the signs of the consignment itself whether it would be what the customer is declaring it to. So it's our intention as well to maybe roll out this course to the rest of the African countries as well, because we have a number of borders that are porous at the moment. So we have borders with six neighboring countries. A lot of the goods that come into the continent come both through via South Africa. So it's really important that we build capacity not only with regards to South African customs, but also the customs authorities in our neighboring countries as well. And in this regard, we recently have talked with the South African Development Community about possibly rolling out such training courses to the other African countries. And it's our hope that with the capacity building in Africa, we will be able to enhance non-selection controls in South Africa as well as the rest of the continent. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Radia. Just before Mr. Lever comes in, Australia, you know, we do capture this on hand cards should there be any need to actually have it printed out. The challenge when you're on hand card and you say CWWC, they're not looking at the document. You see, we don't use abbreviations here for obvious reasons. As a start, what is NTC?
Non-selection Special Counsel. So it's a shorter version of the Resident Counsel for the Board of Supervisors.
Right. Now that's one that wasn't really captured there, but we assumed it was that. All right. But and the others as well. So when you do respond today, and when others respond, and you refer to any of these, please use the correct, the full spelling out. All right. If any abbreviations are useful, if it's in print. Thank you very much. But thank you very much for that presentation, and then we'll turn to yourself, Mr. Levi.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. Madam Chairperson, honourable members of the committee, I welcome this opportunity just to say a few words because I feel that Ms. Radiar has encapsulated the main points that we wanted to get over to you this morning, although I recognise it is quite a mouthful, and we're looking forward to questions from you to be able to perhaps explain in some more detail and amplify what Melanie said. But there's just a couple of things I would like to mention before we go on to that part of the meeting. Firstly, we have a chairperson at the Non-Proliferation Council, Mr. Tiso Macabella, who is the Deputy Director General in the Department of Energy, and he unfortunately wasn't able to come along this morning, and he asked me if I was able to take his place, so that's why I'm here, and I'd like to tender his apologies. Having said that, I'd just like to highlight a difference between ourselves and controls on conventional arms. Ms. Fidiar mentioned the NCACC, and I know you don't like abbreviations, as the National Committee for... even I can't remember. Yeah. You see? What is it? The National Conventional Arms Control Committee. Yes, thank you. But it does become useful, Madam Chair, in meetings sometimes, amongst peers at least, to have these abbreviations in use. But I take your point. The National Conventional Arms Control Committee are restricted to dealing with conventional arms controls, as their name implies. Now, in their case, that's the case of conventional weapons, it's the weapon itself which is controlled. I don't think you all realize that. But in the case of weapons of mass destruction, and we don't have any, let me hasten to say that, but in the case of the area of weapons of mass destruction, that's nuclear, chemical, and biological, and their means of delivery, of course, it's the materials and the precursor materials and the equipment that could potentially be used in the manufacture of weapons of mass destruction and control. So it follows that the expertise for the control of this is of a different kind and much more extensive than dealing with conventional arms. And furthermore, non-proliferation controls are also carried out in terms of international obligations, whereas conventional arms are normally at the national discretion. So again, that's a major difference. And that difference leads on to something which was already mentioned that I would like to highlight. And I want to highlight it basically to give the committee assurance that a good job is being done on behalf of the nation. And the job that is done, and this was mentioned, is done through a committee structure. And these committees involve experts. So we not only have the secretariat comprised of experts, but we work through a committee structure which also brings experts in these various fields together to discuss various permit applications and, in fact, anything else that might be relevant in this field of weapons of mass destruction. So I think with that, Chair, I'll leave it for the moment. We are ready to answer absolutely any questions that might be forthcoming. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lever. Yes. You see, there is the danger that we may be forgetting what we're talking about when we use the abbreviations all the time. But they are helpful. They are helpful. Yeah. But in this committee this morning, as you work with us, we appreciate the long name, and I'm sure there are quite a few questions. The point that you made just now, I'm not sure how many of us were aware of that difference between the conventional weapons and the weapons of mass destruction, and what it is that is controlled and covered. It seems to be a lot broader than I thought, because you use the word potential, even, that have the potential, and that really opens it up. Thank you very much. But let us turn to the clergy in this regard. Do you have any comments, any questions in this area? And that is to the clergy. Hand right now. Shall you go ahead, Honourable Hilders, followed by the Honourable McPherson?
Yes, thank you very much. I just want to say with Tan Finley in chief that your diagram on page 11 is possibly the most confusing diagram I've ever seen as a member of Parliament. It makes absolutely no sense to me, I'm afraid, but there you go. You did a brave job trying to explain it to me. But my question is just related to what role the council has and your office has in terms of trying to prevent and what intelligence we are able to, what intelligence role that you and the council play in trying to prevent the entry of these substances into South Africa, and what extent you rely on law enforcement or customs. I'm not sure who actually does the checks. Is it the SAS? Is it the National Intelligence? Is it customs? Is it the NRCS? It might be, I don't know. So what role do you play with working with other entities in the government in trying to stop these things from coming, possibly gaining entry into South Africa? And can you share any success stories with us? Has there been some examples where we have been able to intercept things coming into this country? And then my final question was, I just think if you look at the kind of trend in global terror at the moment, it's not really someone trying to smuggle a weapons-grade warhead through a shipping container. It's someone walking across the border with a briefcase. And so I want to know what role you and all of the various agencies you work with play in trying to stop that kind of new generation of threat. I think that kind of Jim Clancy model, if I can use that, is long gone. It's much more difficult to detect in the 21st century.
Thank you, Honourable Hugh Lewis. Honourable McPherson.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. I think if one is to watch series like 24 and so forth, you would see the ongoing global battle to restrict dirty bombs, chemical weapons, etc. That has become the front line or the dream day for global terror organizations. And most concerning is the rise of extreme Islamist organizations like ISIS and the threat that they pose to the world order. And the only way to really stop the advance or acquisition of weapons, whether they be nuclear or chemical, is by a trained enforcement agency. So my question to you is, has there been any training within the South African Police Service to deal with a detection and arrest of such individuals or such weapons? And how many officers are actually trained to do so, if you can give me that? And what capacity does the state have to deal with detection of these sorts of weapons at ports of entry? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. I'm just having another look before I raise an issue myself. And a lot of these, I expect, from countries that have a very large structure and grouping of people involved. but I think that it's related as well, possibly to policy, what policy internationally, as to whether or not one may have the same challenges as other countries, and perhaps also to one's geographical location and so on. Because more recently, one has heard about in specialist media, science journals, etc., and others, and economists, that a number of leaders that were mistaken, perhaps, on some of the weapons of mass destruction in certain parts of the world, have actually indicated that there was a breakdown, either a breakdown in communication that they were given between intelligence and various agencies to politicians who had to take decisions, or, on the other hand, inadequate. And I think that it is something, as we move, as we are in the 21st century, and hearing what you've just indicated about the use of its word potential, I suppose essentially there could be 100-odd things which potentially would pose such a challenge, and the interpretation thereof becomes critical, not only scientific analysis thereof. Thank you very much. Over to yourself and your colleague to respond. Thank you.
Just one moment. Yes, Honourable Kalaku, the work of our committee.
Thank you, sir. Just an additional on the question. In your structure, you have the Minister of Trade and Industry at the head. And as you are saying in the presentation, that the country reports to trade and industry. Then in your country composition, you have chairperson and vice chairperson. And then you have trade and industry also. The chairperson and the vice coming from departments, or are they independent experts on the field, working full time on this? The other question, I see you have listed in the participants in the council, military intelligence, defense force intelligence. And then now you are proposing the addition of the national authority, which controls what you call civilian intelligence. Means previously they were not participating in any of the gathering of information around all the issues related to nuclear or weapons of mass destruction, as you are proposing now.
Thank you, Honourable Kalaku. Right, now perhaps you can take it on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for those questions.
Your voice is bird-like, but so soft.
I apologize, Chair. Firstly, the diagram on the international obligation, I do apologize. I think due to us working in the field so extensively, we sometimes assume that it can be easily interpreted, but so I do apologize for that. With regard to the role of the Council of Exchange in prevention and the intelligence role on how we rely on law enforcement for assistance in this regard, all those working committees and bodies that I mentioned participate from various government departments and entities that are closely related to this work. So in this regard, we include the customs officials, products and revenue service, stakeholder relationships, and the customs officials, as well as other government departments and bodies that interact and have information on the non-proliferation issues. So the State Security Agency, for example, would provide information on possible sponsors that they may get through the intelligence forces. And they rely on customs actually to make sure that when they look at containers that are being transferred, they do certain specific checks and to make sure that whatever is declared by the entities that are transferring the goods is actually contained in containers. So that is where the quality identification training culture that we regularly hold for customers comes in as well. Because in that regard, we train them to identify what could be actually a legitimate transfer of one of the control goods, or what could be an item that they should be suspicious of. So of course there are times where these things could go through and we won't notice it because customs has limited capacity as well and they're not able to check each and every container that is transferred through the port. But in most cases, they are able to identify if there is a transfer that's made without the proper authorization. And in this regard, they do regularly contact the secretariat. We have a system where a dedicated phone number has been given to them to get them to directly contact the secretariat in the event of them dropping any container that is suspicious or for them identifying any action that needs further clarification or further information on or to check if a permit is required. So we have, as I said, a dedicated phone number as well as a dedicated email address that is checked every day on a regular basis. So even if the officials are out of the office, they have the ability to check these emails because customs work on a 24-hour basis and we are able to support customers in that regard. So there have been exceptions, and we have had prosecutions where companies have been in non-compliance with the legislation. They have tried to transfer items without the necessary authorization. We are especially concerned about exports. We consider the imports to be of a lower risk than exports, but of course there is a possibility of items being misused in country as well, so that is why we do control imports as well. But we have a higher alert on exports, and we alert customers to the fact that they should pay more attention to the exports of goods related to goods of mass destruction. As you all know, that the mandate of customs is primarily revenue collection. So they would basically look at imports, what's coming into the country and how much revenue they can generate from those imports into the country. But with regards to non-concentration of goods of mass destruction, it's actually the opposite. We need to concentrate more on exports because we don't know where the goods and technologies are being transferred to, which countries it's going to be used in, especially if it is illicit or illegitimate transfers. So there's also the possibility of goods being diverted. So if I give an example of South Africa exporting to a third country where it has to pass through a certain port after leaving the South African port, in those cases we have cooperation with the customs authorities not directly with customs authorities, but through the similar organizations like ours in other countries, and rely on the export control systems as well to make sure that we all work in unison and make sure that none of the items are diverted. But we should also remember that in these control regimes and treaties, there are specific lists of certain goods and technologies that have the capability of being used in a weapon of mass destruction, as well as for normal legitimate uses, commercial uses. So, in that regard, those items are controlled. But there is also the possibility of other toxic chemicals and items that are not listed of being used in such illicit purposes. A clear example of that is the recent use of codeine in Syria. Codeine is not controlled. It's used in production of pork cleaning chemical, for example. It's used in production of other very commonly found commercial goods. So there is a possibility of general day-to-day items being used as a weapon. And in that regard, it is up to the international community to work together. So for example, in that case where codeine was used in Syria, the OPCW, the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, came in, and they attempted to do further investigations with the United Nations in Syria. So it's actually, which is actually the whole non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction controls in the world, we rely on a coordinated effort, which is regards to working with other control bodies, similar to the Non-Professional Council in other countries, working with the customs authorities in various countries, and working through the international organization to make sure that we implement a system of control that is effective. It may not be perfect at all times. There is a possibility of things happening, like through ISIS or other terrorist organizations. But there are mechanisms as well to make sure that after the fact things do take place. And this is not always a perfect system. You don't want to react after the fact. But there are mechanisms in place internationally to address all the concerns that were raised. Unfortunately, global terror is a major issue that we all need to work towards eliminating. There are instances where items that are not top weapon grade can be used for illicit purposes. And somebody walking across the border, as was mentioned, with a briefcase. And that is a major concern, especially with regards to the biological items. Because biological items, it's possible for someone to take a little vial of pathogen, put it into his top pocket, and walk across the border. We have heard of instances where it was transferred in, I think, such as toothpaste, because the biological is possible to do that. But with regards to chemical and nuclear, there are certain minimal quantities that are required to actually be effective. So it actually comes a little more controlled, but with biological, there's not that much control. But in that regard as well, there are agencies, institutions working together to make sure that we have control over these things. Our South African military has been very active with regards to disaster management and especially biological incidents. When the recent white powder events took place internationally, and I'm sure you've all heard that, where anthrax spores were circulated, and in some instances it was just normal talcum powder that was used to scare people. So in those instances we have immediate reaction mechanisms where the military health service would go in, examples, we sent to laboratories such as Project Navy laboratories, which have advanced capabilities and are immediately able to identify whether it's toxic or whether it's threat, and those kind of situations are contained and managed. And that is also where the capacity building with regards to Africa comes in, where as I said, we assist them with regards to reaction to threats and disaster management, because they are, other than being targeted towards toxic chemical and industrial chemical management and spillage of those chemicals, they also allege to the fact of how to react to certain other incidents, like the biological incidents. Of course, the nuclear incidents would be a much more vast incident and more difficult to contain, but there are certain basic reaction mechanisms that are taught where people would be able to react to situations and attain these kind of things.
Okay,
so in that regard, if there are ongoing threats and rise of Islamic groups and other such entities, but we rely on our stakeholder relationships and our interaction between various bodies with the intelligence and the capacity to be able to address these sorts of issues.
Thank you.
And now who's coming in next?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I just wanted to make a quick comment on the question regarding the man with the briefcase, because I think the questions have really picked up on the fact that there is a great bit of public concern related to things which are very difficult to control. If I could just go back to the diagram, which has been commented on as being very sort of complicated and perhaps not very clear, we could have so easily made it even worse, because we work across a spectrum of activities, and just in the Newbear area, for example, the safeguards which were referred to on the side could have easily been expanded to show their interface with security issues, which are of great concern in the nuclear field, and also safety issues, which are in turn connected with security issues. So the man with the briefcase, if it was
a dirty bomb, for example, would certainly excite the people in security, nuclear security. And nuclear security these days is being given a tremendous amount of attention through the International Atomic Energy Agency, and it's filtering down into South Africa. So the assurance I would like to impart there is that we're well aware of these things. Of course, proliferation has presumably already taken place by that stage, and I think the international community recognized that. Recognize also there are many rogue sources or orphan sources around of radioactive materials, as they're called, and these are very often out of control. So the whole international community is on alert all the time in regard to this. There was a question, if I can just talk about the council composition very quickly, the question about the chairperson. The Act doesn't specify that the chairperson be from the department, just that he has the acumen and expertise. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation also. My concern is around the achievements you achieved. There are 5 items of achievement, and my interest is in the issue of capacity building in Africa. And I want to know exactly what kind of capacity building around Africa you have done. Also, can you mention which countries in Africa? Because if you talk about Africa, you talk about the broad Africa, which countries exactly? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Sharbat. Yes, who's taking that? DDG.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think a number of issues were raised in terms of how we manage the non-proliferation work program. Already many as a leader have indicated that international cooperation is quite critical in this regard. The Secretariat as well as the Non-Proliferation Council are active in participating in international committees that control the flow of compound items. And that is where we get the intelligence in terms of new items that need to be controlled, but also through the work of the Council and the participation of the intelligence community in the Council, we are able to pick up and also continuously update the list of controlled items, and also ensure that we work closely with SARS and flag those items in the SARS system, because there are a lot of developments every time with regards to this area. But also important, Chair, is regional cooperation in this regard, and I'll also come to the question that was asked now with regards to our capacity building program in the rest of the continent. Regional cooperation is very important in how we manage the work in this area, which is why we are working very closely with our regional partners, so that you have the capacity in the neighboring member states in terms of customs control. So the capacity building program also talks to customs cooperation in this regard, but also training with regards to management of chemical spillages, if there are any, so that they have effective systems and cooperate together in this regard, but also with regards to intelligence, because the neighboring countries may pick up that there is a chemical weapon or biological weapon that is being proliferated. So it's important that we share intelligence as regional economies as well in this regard. So we work closely with the AU as well, and so that we have broad coverage of the work program, because we do have limited resources as a country, but the aim is to ensure that we reach as many countries as we can to the AU system, and work with the UN as well, so that in their training programs we can also see how we support the UN system when it comes to their capacity building work programs in the continent, because the critical issue is to ensure that all the countries are able to fulfill their obligations with regards to the implementation of Resolution 1540 of the UN in terms of the control of the Brazilian ISF. So that is basically how we manage the work program. Thank you.
Right. I think Seth completed your input as well, or do you want to take a final input then, Gigi? Right. Well, I think members, you know, it's very seldom that we do have weapons of non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, you know, sort of every second year. But what we should keep in mind is that I think this was passed, was it 21 years ago, and a lot has happened during that time. And I have no doubt that the department under whose mandate this comes is looking into that and will keep us abreast of fresh developments in the light of technical changes in the world and the geopolitical changes under which we've undergone in 21 years. But thank you very much for coming all this way, the council, both of you here this morning. Thank you very much, Mr. Levers and Ms. Ridlam. Thank you. And also the DDG on this matter. Thank you very much. What I would appreciate is if you could give us any text that you may have. This was quite a complex issue, and I doubt that we're all on top of it, as it were, and that would be welcome. Thank you very much. Just going to have a short 1-2 minute break. I want to grab some hot water. I doubt there's anything more than that outside. And does take me back to university where we use the hot water from the bathroom, and I hope we don't quite get to that. Yeah. Anyway, just a 3 to 5 minute break, thanks. Thank you.
I just want to check that. Good morning, everyone. It looks like the core group are here again, and we really appreciate your presence, Honourable Mashaba, what with the Honourable Mantash missing, as well as the Honourable Williams, who, after sterling efforts yesterday, his body says, no, they put him, it's putting him off. He's really not well. So thank you for staying in the course. I do appreciate that. Thank you, Honourable Quinnell, for returning after the science and technology. Much appreciated. All of you with more than one committee, you have my full appreciation because I know how challenging that can be. Members, yesterday we went through the bill, the promotion and protection of investment bill. And at the end of that, and I actually read out the input of the Freedom Front, in which I indicated the Freedom Front Plus had put in a mental apology. But that is very clear. I believe it's not with us again today, and it should have been as among those things handed out. But I did ensure it was handed out yesterday. All right? The same time, we had, at the end, a minority view expressed by the Honourable Hill Lewis for the DA and the minority view expressed by the Honourable Yasser Hayson. Now, I asked that to be printed out, and we do have it in front of us. I've asked for that to be distributed per se. When I did get both positions, it became clear to me that we had bordered onto a report rather than the views, and that it is not for me to insert words into the mouths of any other political party or their members. So I tried to issue as much as one could yesterday, and I think the balance is in front of you. We consulted with the table on this matter, as it has come up before the previous term under the Honourable Mario
Ambrosini, Ariane Ambrosini, and where for the first time the minority clause in the rule book was exercised. And he had spoken on mic, and it was not what was captured, as you know, what Hansard had captured, and we had tried to type that out. Anyway, after much ado, and a compromise was reached with him when it was recognized that it's not a report we are looking for, but a view from minority parties which should be captured in the report. And that was the committee's experience, but it was also the experience of Parliament. For the first time, the minority rule was exercised. I wasn't even aware it existed until then. Since then, it's been used quite regularly by all parties. All right. So, on that basis, I sought the advice of the table to say, now what do we do? We've got this situation. And we have two approaches. The one approach I was advised of by the committee secretary, and I think I can quote you on that, and that is that we need to rescind the report, that's how you put it, and then do this report again. The other view, which we have from talking to those on the table and also who've had this experience, is really that what you need to do is simply comply with the rule book, which says the minority view should be captured in the report. And that is what has always been done. So I'm putting that to the committee before I make a complete ruling on that. So we are two approaches to it. Neither is wrong. Okay. So, you know, I have your view. Which one, which route would you prefer to go? As I said, the table here leans heavily on rescind. Well, express yourself.
Chairperson, the views expressed in yesterday's meeting by the Democratic Alliance and the views submitted afterwards, the spirit is the same, but it's not exactly what Mr. Hubert indicated. So in order for us to proceed, I would advise that the committee send its previous report so that views as submitted by Mr. Hubert as expressed in the report that he submitted afterwards be incorporated into the report.
Right. And Mr. Herman has had advice, senior advice from the table on that. Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis?
Yes, Chair. As I said yesterday, I was speaking from handwritten notes, so there's no way that when I typed it, I could remember the exact words that I spoke to. So if I'm perfectly happy for us to go and listen to the recording and take my words verbatim from what I said in the committee, or to use the one that I submitted, because as the Secretary said, the spirit is the same, the gist of it is exactly the same, it's just that it's not possible to use the exact same words, obviously, because I was typing from memory and speaking from notes. So frankly, I'm comfortable with whichever way. You can either use the Hansard version, or you can just use the one that I submitted. The gist is exactly the same.
Right. Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis. Let me take different parties at a time. I will take you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Nkongi.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman. I would like the committee secretary to explain to me from the rescinding whether we are going to be starting afresh the report and the deal, or is there any incorporation of this? So if that could be explained, and then we can have a view.
Right, I indicated I've handed out documents, and I indicated the two approaches, all right? That's what we. And the one in which we always pursue is what is captured here, which is, where is it now? Where's my copy? My copy. This is my copy, which I take you don't have yet. I think it should be handed out. Sorry, I think you should have this. Sorry, please hand it out. If then we'll get questions on something that you can see. And I'm going to ask you, as I respond to what Mkongi, Honourable Mkongi is saying, to have these two in your hand. What you... Yes, just a minute. This one, I want you to have this one in your hand. You've just been given it. Then I want you to take minority views here, which you've got. All right? You've got that. All right. Now, we're not doing the bill. We're doing the report of the committee. That is the end part. Okay? So I think I've responded to the clarification. Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you, Bill. I just wanted clarity on whether it is possible for the report to be submitted as with the majority view and then for a separate minority report submitted with it, or whether you're looking to include it together and then ask us to vote on that report.
Yes, you see, this is the point I made. The one thing the rule does cover, it is not a report, it's not a minority report. It is the views that must be captured. In fact, it's quite specific. If you do not, you know, you, meaning the committee, if a committee cannot reach consensus. And it says quite specifically here, and I, as I say, I really had to learn the hard way then. If it is not a unanimous report, you must specify in which respects there was not consensus. And in addition to the majority report, meaning X, whatever it was, express any views of a minority in the committee. It's on 105. And this is why I say it's not a report. It must be one report, but you must be able to indicate, and I'm going to say, for example, can I read from this one that you've just handed up last? I'm going to just give an example here. You've got the beginning, I don't want to read that per se. You then read that, and then you have a minority view. And you indicate the minority view that there is there, which you put either here on hand side, okay, or this here, down here. So, you have this report, which you've got 1 to 13, if I'm not, which indicates all of the issues. Then you have your minority views. Not report, your views. I'm not changing your views. I hope you get that quite clear. I'm talking about the composition of the report. Do I have any explanation, Mr. Herman? Honourable Kalala?
Sir, I think that's all of us is on the roads, because this is essentially a committee report. But as it is said in the rules, we must reflect the views which were different from those who were expressed in the comments by the majority. So for me, I think if the colleagues from DA and IFP are satisfied that those were actually the views which yesterday they were actually arguing around, then I don't see a problem in that inclusion, so that we can be able to move forward.
So, to make it quite clear, we're not going to change your views. It would be helpful if people listened. Honourable Hill Lewis in particular, as you spoke to this, where your views are here, we're not altering them. But we're saying they should have been captured as part of a full report. We've given you the report on each clause. So what you're going to get is this. And for the record, I want to go through this process. I want you to look at this, because that's what you'll vote on. And then you to hand to me, which you probably have your minority views and types. At time, you do not have to use the hashtag one, you can use what you typed up.
Okay, is it possible for the secretary to send me this hashtag one quickly? Because, in electronic format. Because if you give me an option between the two, I must say I prefer to use the one that I actually said in committee, the hands-on version. So this, I'm really grateful to receive the hands-on. If I can just clean up the camera, because obviously this has been captured verbatim. So it says here, lastly, Madam Chairperson. Now obviously I'm not going to put Madam Chairperson into the report. So I just need to clean it up quickly and then send it back. It'll take me 2 minutes. If I can just receive quickly, it'll literally take me 2 minutes. I just want to remove the Madam Chairperson and the honourable members and all that kind of thing.
Honourable Hilders, we will do that. It'll need to take a bit of time, sort of 2 or 3 minutes. Hello? Okay, do you agree? And during that time, let's just put this aside for a minute. We'll leave, and I have Mr. Medima up here. We'll do some minutes while we're waiting. We'll get that. All right. And essentially, it's what I asked to be handed up here. But you're going to just clean it up. Fair enough. Are we all agreed? Thank you. And Honourable Mishama, thank you very much for being here, numbers, etc. Let's get these committee members.
Chairperson, can I just, I've got an hour left. I must go to a 12:30 appointment, but let me just ask, can't we adopt a report? And the minorities reviews. Well, can't we do that now? But we must try to do it before 12:30.
We're only meeting until 12:30. We're hoping to meet till 12. Right. We all, other members indicated they don't have time after 12. Are you dealing with that then, Mr. Hill? Right. October 14th. Right. 14th October. So we have present here. You have Honourable Kalako, Colonel Williams, Declaration. The others have apologies. Was the briefing by the Company's Intellectual Property Commission 60 annual report?
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm just spoken to the secretary. As I said, the gist of the two is exactly the same. It's the words that differ. I'm really ambivalent or agnostic about which one is used. If it's going to be easier for us to proceed right now just to use one that I've submitted in writing, then let's just go forward with that.
I do appreciate your constructive approach. Thank you. Perhaps your colleagues should just return to the vote. Let's finish this bit of minutes then quickly. All right, page 1, 14th October. Page 1, I'm just waiting for everyone to have them. Page 2, and the register. Yes, I have asked, chairs, well not chairs, but secretaries, please not to put only AP, please put if it's medical or if they are on parliamentary business. Makes it easier for SARS when we want our SARS certificates.
without having to need to, you know, forensic looking for paper or IDs. And so I'm not sure who chaired that, but if whoever was the secretary, please. Can we have someone to propose adoption? Honourable Quirinos seconded by Honourable Kalako. Good. 1 set of minutes done. We use that just as a filler. We're now coming back to the committee report on the promotion and protection of investment. But everyone on track? We, as I indicated the approach, we need to put it to you that we need to rescind the report yesterday as it did not comply with the rules per se. Can we please have someone propose the rescindment of that report? Thank you, Honourable Hill-Lewis, seconded by the Honourable Kalako. Now, can I put the report to you that we have prepared in compliance with the rules? Protection. 4, the bill be confirmed. 5, most importantly, the bill contains six, at the highest political level of SADC, it should be spelled out. Well, I'm just making this clear, it must be spelled out. Seven, after duly considering the submissions. Eight, the committee is of the view. It was broad agreement. 10, the committee is of the view. 11, furthermore, the bill does not seek. 12, the bill provides the necessary regulatory powers. And 13, the committee is of the view that the bill must provide the necessary protection to investors and balances the rights of investors and the rights of the state to regulate the public interest. And we have somebody, I'll put the game first, get that part agreed to. And then the minority report.
But I just want to say, notwithstanding what Mr. Kalaka says, some of these are, I mean, can we point on some of these points? Because I don't agree with all of them.
This is why I put that question to you. And if your views do not cover that, that is what you needed to express upon. So, are your views, I was under the impression that it did.
No, I mean, that is this. Several points here that are just factually incorrect.
Well, I think it does mean we're not going. It is a committee report that we must move forward on with your view expressed. So in that case, you will indicate to us here which ones you are not in agreement with, and then express it in the minority view. To begin with, just give me the number, so you can then patch it. Just the number to start.
Number.
What don't you agree with?
Five.
Just a minute. All right.
With some points of contention of 5 and 12, and then just
completely on what you were saying, and I want to comment, but let me hear what the whip has to say before I make comment. Thank you.
Lord Chair, if you look into the views expressed, the minority views by GA, I think these views do cover this point. Because in essence, if I understand, in essence, you don't agree with the people. And that is what I capture, carry out in your position. And it covers, in fact, this covers this point, which you actually, my view, Chair, is we will go back to your you raised your position. Hence, in your submission yesterday, and what you put on, it captures exactly what your position on the world is, what it is that's not true. But even including that, I remember your argument on the minister's regulation powers. So to me, Chair, now if we go back, we open that up a bit, and if you read the minority groups, those points are covered too. Because you know what will happen now? Just that question. You know what will happen now is, we might end up in a situation where we say we agree they must re-amplify their point and add more and more. I don't know where that will end. That's my only problem. Otherwise,
I take the point that both Honourable Lewis has made. You only just got this. And that point. I take the point that the Honourable Colaco is making. But what I can say,
I'm happy to agree with Honourable Colaco. I just think on the second point about the accuracy of the language.
The point I want to agree on, comment on. Allow me to do that first and I'll take the point. But you don't know what I'm going to say. No.
Come back after me.
I will hear you
after I've spoken. I will hear you.
You know, they have whisperers and dog whispers. I don't know if you're a chair whisperer. That's as well. But let's just take back to this. The issue, you know, firstly was broad agreement. What I can say from my name, I didn't cover every meeting, but I did read and consult those who had chaired. There was agreement that the Constitution does cover this. However, some members of the committee were adamant that the details of this should be outlined in this legislation. And there was further contention, well, if it's in the Constitution, why do we have to put it here? And much debate on that particular point. And in the other point, with specific reference to some of the proposed expropriation, etc. Now what one can say, because the agreement refers to the Constitution, there was agreement from the majority. And I hate moving into majority and minority in this part of the report for obvious reasons. But you've got to vote on it. So that was why I suppose Stoff wrote the word broad. There was agreement that the Constitution is adequate to do that. But some members wanted it codified within. And it's not disagreeing. It's talking about the Constitution. And the details of this is being outlined in the law. Not all members agreed that the details were adequately covered in the legislation. You know, it's either that or we just take out the word rules because there was disagreement and we use the word agreement. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. But I think the problem with respect tonight is that the phrasing is, even if you discuss the word broad, you say there was agreement that Section 25 of the Constitution is adequate to protect the physical property. While to some extent that is true, we believe that that should be codified. So, I mean, I just think we just need to work out phrasing for that. And then also for point eight, you'll remember that the Honourable Elvis was very, very particular with extending protection of investments to outward investments. And then just to highlight the other point that I see at point 10, that you...
Just finish on point 9, I want to make a proposal along these lines. Just read it into the mic, Mr. Holmes.
investments abroad. The committee's view was supported by a legal opinion provided by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. However, some members did not share this view. I think that's a fair reflection. Thank you. Now, I want to put this to the committee. This is a committee report. I'm putting this to you for someone to move this report. Yes, Honourable Nkongi?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to move with the decision on that report.
Can we have somebody to take over this? Seconded by the Honourable Krimmel. Thank you. Are there any objections? Anyone opposed? Committee members?
Yes, Chairperson. These report the objections of the Democratic Alliance and our minority views. Thank you.
Thank you. And we then, can you formally give us this minority report as it is here? Honourable Nkongi? No. Well, we're somewhat relaxed today, so that's fine. So let's leave it there. Can I just note, Honourable Hill, have you got what I've got in front of me here? The Democratic Alliance, South Africa needs to attract. Please get it. Can you just say one and read two or three words from each one, two and three into the record?
1.1, so that means to attract. 1.2, this bill fails to achieve that. 1.3, it provides no guarantees. 1.4, the DA proposed. 1.5, the DA objected. Bullet point 1, the bill does not. Bullet point 2, the committee. Bullet point 3, the bill contradicts. Bullet point 4, the bill exposes. 1.6, the bill was an excellent opportunity. End. So
you will see that we have renumbered it. And I'm sure that that's in accordance with your own views. We follow the Harvard system. Right. Members, we also have captured here, this is a very difficult one, the IC one from yesterday. It's included in the main report. On that particular note, for the record, we do have a report which all members agree has gone through the proper processes according to the rules. We now are going to ask, I'm signing this, and just to indicate that this is exactly the same, we've got some changes, I will sign it this afternoon. Honourable Nkongi?
No, Chairperson, I understand the process is correct. We agreed because of the rules allows for the minority rules. But the ANC is not agreed. So what is the recourse for that?
No, Honourable Nkongi, the report is captured, meaning the only reason there's a minority view is because they're not the majority, and this is the view. You don't have a minority view if it's unanimous. Thanks,
Honourable. Are you sure that we shouldn't include a new section titled The Majority's Views on the Minority's Views? But come to think of it, if we're doing that, we'll then need to have a minority view on that views as well.
The process becomes endless, like an Alice in Wonderland. Now, can we leave this alone for a minute and do some real hard work? And that is the minutes. Conclude our minutes, please. Honourable MacPherson.
Sorry, Chairperson, have you dealt with the 2nd of September? I might have just been outside of the room when you did that.
No, in fact, we were rushed here. Where are we? We did the 14th of October, allowing to be the person in front of me. Let's go to the 13th of October. Here we have Honourable Colato, Cranorth, Williams, Hildreth, present. We haven't done the 13th. No. Page 1. And you were dealing with the NCC. These were, this was the Beast of our process, was it? Was it? Yes. And the National Consumer Regulator, NCR, as well as the National Regulator Compulsory Fix. Page 2. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of point that I raised before I left in August. Technically, the committee adjourns, not closes. I don't know when that changed, so could you check with your own advisors on that? Page 3. Right, page 3, please edit the apologies to make sure you know if it's a political, a medical, or parliamentary business. Right. I have someone to propose adoption 13th of October. Honourable Quirrell, seconded by... Who was there? Who was there? The 13th of October. So you've got Honourable Colato, Colonel Williams is not here, Hildreth. Say me yourself then, Honourable Hildreth. Thank you, seconded. Right, then we go to the 15th of September. And that is President Fubbs, Honourable Fubbs, Honourable Colato, Honourable Williams, Honourable Bill Lewis, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Elvis, quite a lot of people present there. Page 2. This was the bill. Public hearings. They public hearings, actually, with a plural. Right. 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Because, you see, all of us pay tax, I would assume we are. And if you're at work, it's not only this committee you can be attending. And that is why we need to know, what is your apology? Have you just decided to climb table, mountain, or swim? And we had someone to propose adoption who was present. There were so many present, have your choice. Come on now, where are all of you? There was Honourable Colato, thank you, seconded by. Honourable McPherson, you've hardly spoken for the minutes. No, 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 do just give us your seconding, and it is a challenge. Thank you. Right. Then, and if it's yours coming up, the 9th. Second, I don't have those. Second of the 9th of September, Wednesday, a very full house again, yes, and it was briefing GGI, GCA, also the European Union, European Community, the former formal consideration of the GDCA of European Community on the accession of the Republic of Croatia. I hope none of you are asking for a full debate on this. Some of you think it was a full debate, but honourable members, on Croatia. Number two, page two. Page three. Page, hang on. Presentation by the Centre for Constitutional Rights on the Promotion of Protection. Right, page three at the bottom. Page four. Page five. Page six. Right, please check the apologies here. Medical. Right, you see there. That's what you do. Finance, standing committee, I wrote. Right. Thank you very much. That was the A9. So, can we have somebody to propose adoption, Honourable Nkongi?
I'm not sure whether I'll postpone the request of the meeting.
Yes. The meeting adjourned at until Friday, the 11th. Mm-hmm. You see, I do. There are three questions I have. First of all, that was a Wednesday tonight. So the dates are correct, 9 and 11. But I'm trying to look at this closure. The word closure again. You can't have both. Would you like to comment? 2 minutes, I'm not sure. Members, I think we must all be realistic. Templates work when indeed they make sense. When they don't make sense, and it wasn't Mr. Medina that did the night, from fairness to him. So let's just say it was adjourned, particularly when we're not meeting the next day. We're meeting on Friday. It's a reminder to members we are meeting. What is your point, Honourable Nkongi?
My point to present. On page 6, minutes of the 2nd September, saying closer, the meeting has ended at 18:40.
Another set of minutes. Now we are.
The 2nd September, minutes.
We're not there.
What happened tonight?
We haven't adopted tonight. We are in the process of when you put your hand up, I say thank you. All right, let's have someone who can propose the adoption. Right, Honourable McPherson, seconded by the Honourable Colotto. DDG, thank you very much. 15. Now what do we want? Where's the second? I've got the second, right. The 2nd of September was the letter of authority. It was fine. It was great. We have a huge number of people present here. Must be people joining us from another committee, yes, higher education. So, huge numbers of people present.
Say,
Technology Committee at once.
Send me under apologies. Hello? Under apologies, right. In a chain of opening, adoption, attire people. Two. Three. Redivia, huh? NRCF gaming. Page four. This was quite an extensive input. I mean, last time keep these because we'll be following this up in the new page four. Page five. Honourable Smackerson.
Thanks, Jeff. You'll recall that there was a number of presentations, recommendations made by a number of the participants for that, but I just don't see any of the recommendations noted or even minutes, and that concerns me, because since then, and I've written to you about this, I don't know what came out of that engagement. There seems to be no conclusion or no recommendation on how to proceed forward on the matter, even though there were a number of recommendations made by the participants.
In fact, there is a point we have raised several times in the committee that, notwithstanding that we do get the Hansard, the massive Hansard, and as you can see here, the reference is to a Hansard. You see that every time. Nevertheless, on each of us, we should simply note the position. So not this huge document that we do have. When are we getting the Hansard or document on that? Because when we don't put it down and there's a reference to it like that, that means the Hansard. That's what it means. So the Hansard is not here. And we do need to know if we come into the committee new or not having been there, and some people weren't there, presentation by Chief Chiller, what was the position there? I'm going to drag out the minutes that I'm directly corrected on my computer of May and June. And I want that style followed as I requested. But you do have it there on the Hansard, you see, and that you should have with you today or tomorrow on the paper.
Thanks. I mean, let me just give you one point that was noted was the status of the backlog of applications for legislative authority seen during the committee oversight. The NRC has informed the committee that the application backlog has been processed, the matter was addressed, but I know that continues to take place. So, and I think that we need to please look at the Hansard, what was recommended, because I assure you that since the 7th of September it got even worse. And so I would really like us, if we can, just hold these minutes in advance until the next meeting, so we've looked at the Hansard, what the recommendations were, so that they can be minuted, that we can actually properly take these minutes.
We're not finished going through the minutes. And I've become even more conscious of doing things according to process. I don't disagree with you. Page three. We've just said that it's captured there, but we need to do X. Four. Five. Six. Now what we want, and nobody signed all that. Just a minute here. Okay. See, I don't see the signatures, all of them. Where?
few technical things that need to be cleaned up. So what we will do is, it's there, the information is there, but let's capture it as has been requested, all right? And both sets of, what do you call it, signatures. Thank you. Honourable Nkongi.
Citizen, something that I'm comfortable with, I'm not sure that is the temporary that we are talking about. Whenever we discuss, they say the committee to be directed and raising the following key issues. I'm saying, number of cases, but let's go with cases.
3.2, no. Now, but that, you see, I wanted to make a general point that there is a way we took a decision when we came in last year. This is what we want. And at the end of each one, we want to be able to give the minutes to someone, whoever wasn't there, here we are. And they know what happened. They know the position taken. And we don't have that. So I don't want to go blow by blow now. I want to actually just have a meeting with the Secretariat. They have been under pressure and let's leave these, all right, in a veil. We leave these aside. We come back to our schedule and looking at the time, we said 12 o'clock and well, it's now 12:15. But I want to thank all members of the committee at the end of this week. You had a very tough period in the last 3 months in particular. And some of you not well, some of you putting off your medical appointments, and it's been very, very, I think, heavy, the pressure on everyone, both staff and members. But what I would like to appeal to all members, I really appreciate, as chair, your hard work. We normally used to meet a Friday as well, and we said just at this time we won't because we're focusing on other things. But what I wouldn't like to have as a precedent repeated, and that is the deterioration of any meeting into a meeting in which is no longer that constructive. I think each one of us here does represent a constituency. We come from a political party. And all our political parties, I'm quite certain, even if they don't have it in their constitutions, call on us to respect each other, including those who present. So it's an appeal. I know we're under pressure, all of us, but thank you very, very much. And safe journey home. But before we do that, I'll be showing a program on the 10th. It's a briefing by the CIPC on business rescue review. Hobart 8 to Hobart 10. I understand there's an 11 o'clock plenary. Wednesday, it's 8:30, but there's no reason why that shouldn't start at 9 o'clock. No reason. Well, there's no break. Briefing on the DTI second quarter, NGB, NEX. And then the 17th, the briefing by the Minister on the 10th, the WTO, etc. Now some members, if not all, thought we should continue with CAV. I do want to remind members though, on that very day, is the debate. And it's going to be a lot of pressure for members of the committee. So I'm really appealing to you, all of you, to consider that and maybe there's another time we could engage on that. I'm looking at, you know, both the DA here as well as the ANC. I hear what you're saying. So, in that case, it stayed where it is.
very special.
Well, is it? I don't know. Right, that's when it starts. And 3 o'clock on the 17th, it's 8:30 to 11 o'clock you could have. We could ask to use some of the blue to pick an overlap. Shall we do that? I'm looking at lenses. Can we go that route? Thank you. All right, that's it. And the final thing is the oversight. The oversight visits...
Wait, can I just interject on 11? This may affect Honourable Mkongi as well. Wickham Cat MPs, we are by-election in Oxford on that day, on the 11th. And in Paul, in fact, there's 2 by-elections. So we are... Oh, yeah, that's sorry for Nick as well. So we may... I'm not about the 11th.
No, it is a point to raise, because... well, look... Can we take note of it? Can we take note of it? And ask the main coach to look at that. Can I we do that on the Kalako? Yeah, thank you. On the other side, horse racing value chain, the visit to Unilever, the triathlon, Duvet Trade Center, and some other manufacturing. That's planned from the 24th until the 27th of November. Now, we'd like to proceed on that. We have been mentioning it for some time. Can we get this formally agreed to by the committee? Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis.
The Chair, I did submit some other proposals to the Secretary. I hope they were considered.
Send them to?
Yes, Secretary.
Well, I mean, we've got 2, that's what I'm asking.
To Mr. Hill.
Right, I'm not going to please indicate.
Well, Chair, I mean, all of us are receiving huge numbers of complaints about the NRTS. There really is a bottleneck there that is frankly grinding the economy to, you know, a certain portion of the economy to a halt. I know we've had the new committee twice now, but I really think we need to go to the NRTS and get to the bottom of what is happening there. So I sent my email that I proposed to go to the NRTS offices. And then the other one was the Centurion Aviation Village that I asked. That we consider visiting the aviation village. The minister has agreed that he will come with us yesterday. We wish to go. And so I think we should take up that offer and visit there. If we are going to the NRCS, which is in Pretoria, then we should go because it's down the road. So if we can use one of those days, I know most of that program is in KZN, if we can use one of those days to go to Pretoria for those 2 visits, then I think it would add a great deal of value.
Well, as I said, when we discussed this last week or whenever it was, we can only do, we want to do Cape, West Cape Cape, as well as KZN. And we're not going to be able to with the cost. We can only go in one process. We're part of the problem. Well, you haven't voted on this. I'm giving you some of the challenges. The second thing in this regard is that we were made aware at that meeting from Mr. Herman, in fact, I was unaware, that the EDG and another committee had already gone there. And their report has been published. Now, I haven't seen that report. And I said we want to see that report. And that is where we are. So, first you have what's called a technical logistical thing, one province. That's the issue. We haven't been to KZN. We haven't been doing the gambling on the... And we have to do that. It is your own private member's bill, which I feel embarrassed to say. We're still, you know, needing to pick up again. No, and I mean that. I'm being quite frank here, and I put it on record. And the reality is, the horse racing and the gambling, which is part of gambling, has got to be completed. It cannot go on and on. The Liberty Unilever, etc., an entire plant and duvet. Duvet was linked to the horse with some sort of stuff or what do you call it? Quarantine. It's really because it's all KZN. And that was that. However, Honourable Hilders, I do hear what you say. The cab is unlikely to be granted on this occasion because we're waiting for the EDG report and that is now approached. So
But let's pick it up with respect to the NRCX. All right. So I want to simply make that clear. We will approach Mr. Herman and I'll approach Mr. Frode.
Yes, sir. I'd really like to impeach you on the overseas issue, so I don't want to impeach you. I don't think we can impeach you, Chair. No, I really wanted to impeach you on NRCX because, as you know, also know, the one point I wanted to add, which I said to Mr. Herman, is that the only entity that reports to us that's still got a qualified audit this year for the second year in a row. Now, we've heard the explanation again in committee, but I really do think that it's necessary for us to go there and see for ourselves what's going on.
You've made the proposal very strongly and it is captured. I shall come back with a report on Tuesday because I have this afternoon, Thursday and Friday. So, can we at least get the application underway? Can I have a proposal to get under Honourable Quirrell, seconded by Courtney Wright? Thank you. Meeting adjourned until next Tuesday at 8:30. Where is it? V119.